2. Lembke suddenly came in with rapid steps, accompanied by the chief of police, looked absent-mindedly at us, and, taking no notice of us, was about to pass into his study on the right, but Stepan Trofimovitch stood before him, blocking his way. The tall figure of Stepan Trofimovitch, so unlike other people, made an impression. Lembke stopped. "Who is this?" he muttered, puzzled, as if he were questioning the chief of police, though he did not turn his head towards him, and was all the time gazing at Stepan Trofimovitch. "Retired college assessor Stepan Trofimovitch Verhovinsky, Your Excellency," answered Stepan Trofimovitch, bowing majestically. His Excellency went on staring at him with a very blank expression, however. "What is it?" And with the curtness of a great official, he turned his ear to Stepan Trofimovitch with disdainful impatience, taking him for an ordinary person with a written petition of some sort. "I was visited, and my house was searched today by an official acting in Your Excellency's name. Therefore I am desirous—" "Name, name," Lembke asked impatiently, seeming suddenly to have an inkling of something. Stepan Trofimovitch repeated his name still more majestically. "Ah, it's that hotbed. You have shown yourself, sir, in such a light. Are you a professor? A professor? I once had the honour of giving some lectures to the young men of the ex-university." "The young men?" Lembke seemed to start, though I am ready to bet that he grasped very little of what was going on, or even, perhaps, did not know with whom he was talking. "That, sir, I won't allow," he cried, suddenly getting terribly angry. "I won't allow young men. It's all these manifestos. It's an assault on society, sir, a piratical attack, filibustering. What is your request?" "On the contrary, your wife requested me to read something tomorrow at her fete. I have not come to make a request, but to ask for my rights."
"At the fete? There'll be no fete. I won't allow your fete. A lecture? A lecture?" he screamed furiously.
"I should be very glad if you would speak to me rather more politely, Your Excellency, without stamping or shouting at me as though I were a boy."
"Perhaps you understand whom you are speaking to," said Lembke, turning crimson.
"Perfectly, Your Excellency. I am protecting society while you are destroying it. You! I remember about you, though. You used to be a tutor in the house of Madame Stavrogin?"
"Yes, I was in the position of tutor in the house of Madame Stavrogin.
And have been for 20 years the hotbed of all that has now accumulated, all the fruits. I believe I saw you just now in the square."
"You'd better look out, sir. You'd better look out. Your way of thinking is well known. You may be sure that I will keep my eye on you. I cannot allow your lecture, sir. I cannot. Don't come with such requests to me."
He would have passed on again. "I repeat that Your Excellency is mistaken. It was your wife who asked me to give not a lecture, but a literary reading at the fete tomorrow. But I decline to do so in any case now. I humbly request that you will explain to me, if possible, how, why, and for what reason I was subjected to an official search today. Some of my books and papers, private letters to me, were taken from me and wheeled through the town in a barrow."
"Who searched you?" said Lembke, starting and returning to full consciousness of the position.
He suddenly flushed all over. He turned quickly to the chief of police, but at that moment the long, stooping, and awkward figure of Blum appeared in the doorway.
"Why, this official here," said Stepan Trofimovitch, indicating him.
Blum came forward with a face that admitted his responsibility, but showed no contrition.
"Vous ne faites que des bêtises!"
Lembke threw at him in a tone of vexation and anger, and suddenly he was transformed and completely himself again.
"Excuse me," he muttered, utterly disconcerted, and turning absolutely crimson. All this was probably a mere blunder, a misunderstanding, nothing but a misunderstanding.
"Your Excellency," observed Stepan Trofimovich, "once when I was young, I saw a characteristic incident. In the corridor of a theatre, a man ran up to another and gave him a sounding smack in the face before the whole public. Perceiving at once that his victim was not the person whom he had intended to chastise, but someone quite different who only slightly resembled him, he pronounced angrily, with the haste of one whose moments are precious, as Your Excellency did just now, 'I've made a mistake. Excuse me. It was a misunderstanding. Nothing but a misunderstanding.' And when the offended man remained resentful and cried out, he observed to him with extreme annoyance, 'Why, I tell you it was a misunderstanding. What are you crying about?'
'That's very amusing, of course.' Lempke gave a wry smile. But can't you see how unhappy I am myself?'
He almost screamed, and seemed about to hide his face in his hands. This unexpected and piteous exclamation, almost a sob, was almost more than one could bear. It was probably the first moment since the previous day that he had full, vivid consciousness of all that had happened, and it was followed by complete, humiliating despair that could not be disguised. Who knows? In another minute he might have sobbed aloud. For the first moment Stepan Trofimovich looked wildly at him. Then he suddenly bowed his head, and in a voice pregnant with feeling announced,
"Your Excellency, don't trouble yourself with my petulant complaint, and only give orders for my books and letters to be restored to me."
He was interrupted. At that very instant Yulia Mikhailovna returned and entered noisily with all the party which had accompanied her. But at this point I should like to tell my story in as much detail as possible.